brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number 1-800-8-ENYART. Tonight we're going to be talking, well, we're leading up to the end of the month, at which time we'll be going off the air in a few of our affiliate cities, like South Bend, Indiana, Rochester, New York, and others. And what we've wanted to do is in these last shows talk about some of the most important things that this show has discussed in the last 12 years on the air. And one of those things, you know, a lot of Christians look at the Bible as a religious textbook, something to study at Sunday school, something to take out when you want to, you know, think about God and pray and meditate. But Christians, and especially Christian leaders, don't recognize sufficiently that the Bible is a book on public policy. Public policy. The Bible is a criminal justice textbook, among other things. It's a criminal justice textbook. And if we implemented the criminal laws, not the cultural rules that God gave for Israel, but the criminal laws that are in the Bible, like do not murder, you know, in the Ten Commandments, do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery, don't commit perjury. And then God tells us what the punishments for these crimes should be. If we implemented those, then there would be less crime. And as a result of less crime, there'd be less pain and heartache in the world. Last night in the Denver area, there were a number of horrendous accidents last night. One, not far from our Bob Enyart Live studio here, just outside of the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, was a drunk driver leaving a bar late at night and just plows into a young guy on a motorcycle. The guy on the motorcycle, he worked as a waiter at Macaroni Grill. He's on his way home and gets hit. Now he's in the hospital. In fact, this young guy, I know the story because it's my nephew, Sean. And this morning at 4:20, my phone rang. My mom had been in the hospital with Sean, who was pretty much out. So I went into the hospital with my son, Nathaniel. And Sean is doing reasonably well. In fact, in about 2 hours, he'll be going in for surgery. The doctors will put a steel rod in his leg, in his, tibia? Is it? From his knee down to his ankle, there will be a rod thicker than a pencil and over a foot long in the inside of that bone. Because I looked at the x-rays and it's broken. And Sean was, his motorcycle apparently is totaled. He's all scraped up and shooken up. He said he's not going to ride a motorcycle ever again. This was the second problem, right? Accident, sort of, in the last couple weeks. And Sean is an excellent rider, but it doesn't matter how good you are on the motorcycle. How about other people? And here we've got a drunk driver who now, you know, he was arrested. He's charged with drunken driving and vehicular assault, and what was the third? Reckless driving, something like that. And he's a 28-year-old guy. I don't know anything at all about him other than those details. I don't know if he's a lifestyle drunk or just an occasional drunk. I don't know. I don't know if mothers against drunk driving know that they're ignorant strategy promotes drunkenness by advocating designated drivers, teaching young people on college campuses that it's okay to get drunk, just have a designated driver, and that is a despicable message. But the Christian church doesn't know that the Bible is a criminal justice textbook, and it doesn't recognize the influence that we should have that we should be telling our government, telling our society how the laws should work, how the criminal justice system should work. For example, in the Bible is where we find the presumption of innocence. In the Bible tells us how the government should select judges and what the appeal process should be. The Bible discusses the admissibility of evidence and perjury and how to deal with contempt of court. And what if someone attempts a crime and doesn't pull it off? Do they somehow, does that accrue to their benefit? Oh, you tried to rape, but you didn't quite succeed. You tried to murder. You tried to kidnap. You tried to steal, but you didn't succeed. And so therefore, it's not as serious. You know, there are so many aspects of our criminal justice system that are just flat out broken. The system systematically, it undermines credibility in the system itself. Systematically, people are often offered plea bargains. Charges are stacked up on somebody. And so that for maybe a crime that's relatively not very serious, prosecutors will stack up charges and threaten the guy with, look, you could go to jail for 8 years or 20 years. We'll offer you this plea bargain where you just do probation and pay a $3,000 fine or whatever. And the guy takes it. And so he says to everyone, you know, I wasn't guilty, but I was facing this absurd punishment. And the system is designed to grind people down, even if they're innocent people, so that they'll accept a plea bargain. Plea bargains are wrong. So our system is utterly broken. And, you know, incarceration, putting people in jail as a form of punishment, the Bible addresses incarceration, and only evil governments put people in jail as a form of punishment. God authorizes three forms of punishment in the Bible: the death penalty, corporal punishment, like flogging, and restitution, where you pay back the victim financially. You never have to pay a fine as a punishment for a crime, according to God. You know, our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Throughout the show, you know, each night we've been taking a show in the last week and focusing on a particular topic. Like we talked about the nature of God and how God changes on one show, how he's alive and the Son of God became flesh. We talked about how important it is for young people to be married. So many big churches think, you know, they have people in their church and they live together and they're not married and nobody says anything. So we had a wedding on the show this week, a wedding of a young couple. Now, tonight, it's crime. Listener-supported radio right here, Bob and Yurt Live, and this is a live commercial break. I want to give you our phone number that, it's the call-in number, but you can also use it for our order line. If you'd like to order a video, one of the Bob and Yurt Live videos, like Mount Moriah on the evidence for the resurrection, or God and the death penalty, what the New Testament says about capital punishment, a Bible tour of Israel, Get Out of the Matrix. Oh, that is a really fun video where I got to debate a philosophy class and their professor on whether or not right and wrong exists, absolute truth. We've got a brand new video that'll be available in just a few weeks. In fact, we're taking orders for it now. It's Does God Exist? A video of when I did the seminar, Does God Exist, in Indianapolis this past year. We had a videographer there. And so it's the first of two videos will be available in just a few weeks. And you could order that. You can call us at 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. If you live in one of the cities that we're going off the air in June, well, you can find us on the web at kgov.com, kgov.com. If it's a couple of weeks from now, months from now, a year from now, and you think, hey, where is that Bob and Yurt? What's going on with Bob and Yurt Live? I wonder if I could get any of those Bible study albums that he had. I'm really getting interested in the Bible. Well, remember the phone number, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. We encourage you to give us a call, check out our Bible study materials, and especially the plot, our manuscript, and the overview of the whole Bible. All right. Hey, to those of you listening via the web at kgov.com, the plot, if you've read it, you know, so many people have told us how much they've enjoyed it. Well, I've been working on the sequel to the plot called The Script, and chapter 3 is just about done. In fact, on our website at kgov.com, the online store, I don't think we have the script listed, do we? Because normally we make these writings available, you know, even though they're incomplete, because it's during this time that I get to incorporate feedback from early readers in the manuscript. And I think that's why the plot ended up being so popular, is because literally over 100 people gave input. And so we're doing that now with the script, and we'll have to add that to the store. But you can call and order it. One 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So the Bible is a criminal justice textbook. Did you know that? And if we had laws on the books, as God tells us to in the Bible, then my nephew almost certainly would not be sitting in a hospital right now. You know, today he was supposed to move into a brand new apartment. He's got a great job as a waiter, not a busboy. You know, being a busboy is great. I did that for a while. But as a waiter, which pays real well if you do a great job, and he was getting ready to buy a car. He has a beautiful motorcycle. Well, he had a beautiful motorcycle. But now his life is thrown, his financial life is thrown in a tailspin because of this. And this 28-year-old drunk who hit him last night, you know, he'll be what? Punished appropriately? There are thousands upon thousands of people who've been maimed for life, people who have been killed by drunk drivers, and pretty much it's just part of the system. It's part of the routine. So what would the Bible have us do regarding our criminal justice system? You know, for one thing, we'd have more of the death penalty. The death penalty would be applicable to more crimes. For example, kidnappers would be put to death. Every convicted murderer would be swiftly put to death. Anyone who kills someone through gross negligence would be swiftly put to death. And as a result, instead of having more than 10,000 murders every year in America, instead of having thousands of people who are killed by drunk drivers every year in America, we would see those numbers plummet. God promises that in the Bible, that if you have the swift, if the sentence against a guilty man is executed speedily, then you will have a significant drop in crime. You will not have a crime epidemic. That's a promise that God makes us in the Bible. So, you know, Christians, we maybe go to a Christian bookstore and we buy this little box of promises. You read God's promises every day. And God promises to be with you and to comfort you and to hear your prayers. And that's all wonderful. And that's all what the Bible teaches regarding your personal life. But the Bible also teaches a lot about government and public policy. The Bible's a criminal justice textbook because salvation is based in criminal justice. We have committed a crime against God. We've sinned and violated His law, so there are charges against us. And there's to be a judgment day. And Jesus Christ was executed. He was crucified. And He offers Himself in our place to the judge of all the earth, to God the Father and says, I took their punishment. They should be set free if they ask me for salvation, if they love me, if they trust me. So that's what that's why the Bible is a criminal justice textbook. That's why God says, well, you need two or three witnesses to convict in a capital crime. Does that mean two or three eyewitnesses? No, of course it doesn't. Most murderers don't wait till a crowd gathers to commit their murder. But Christians are so ignorant. They look for ways to dismiss the Bible, to suggest that the Bible is unimportant or the Bible doesn't make any sense. For over 10 years, I've asked Christians this question. What does the Bible say is the punishment for two unmarried people who are fornicating? Let's say two young people, two teenagers, they're not married, and they're having sex. What does the Bible say is the punishment for them? And virtually every Christian I've asked says the death penalty. It's not the death penalty! Now, why would they say the death penalty? Why? The Bible suggests that they get married. That's the rule of thumb in the Bible. Get married. But why would Christians almost universally say, well, the Bible says it's the death penalty? Well, for one, we don't know the Bible as the Christian community. And for two, most Christians are not interested in what the Bible says and what the big, thick part of the Bible says because it's too much of a responsibility. They might actually have to read it. And so they'd rather discredit God, make him and his word look bad by showing how unreasonable it is. Well, God says they should be put to death. No, he doesn't. Now, if you commit adultery, that is, if you seduce another man's wife, then God says you should be put to death. And that was the law in America. That was the law in America. In various states in America, and when we were a nascent country, if you committed adultery with another man's wife, you were to be put to death. And if you kidnapped someone, you were to be put to death. And if you murdered someone, you were to be put to death. You know, we have these diseases now, which some of the diseases are coming from animals, right? You know, the Drudge Report, millions of visitors per week, Matt Drudge on the internet. His headline today is SARS, you know, SARS, right? Where in China, they're threatening to execute people who spread SARS if they violate their quarantine, which, by the way, that is a good criminal justice move. If the government says you have an infectious disease, that disease is potentially fatal, you have to stay in your home. And then you got some guy who just says, well, forget that, I'm out of here. And he infects other people and some of them die. So China, in this case, is doing the right thing, saying that they may execute SARS quarantine violators. That, according to a Reuters story a week ago. Well, now Matt Drudge has SARS jumped from animals with a question mark. That's his headline story right now on the internet. The World Health Organization, the WHO, the World Health Organization has traced the SARS virus to a cat in China. Now, this is an Associated Press story out today, May 23rd. Now, the researchers might be wrong, but they might be right. I doubt that they have anything against cats. But we've seen diseases like syphilis and gonorrhea and even AIDS. Qualified researchers have suggested the AIDS virus came from monkeys and homosexuals having sex with monkeys and gonorrhea from dogs and syphilis from sheep. And so in the Bible, God said, if a man has sex with an animal, you shall put to death the man and the animal. Sounds good. And in this country, in Massachusetts, that's one of the laws they had. In the Massachusetts Bodies of Liberties, their first statewide law book, it said, if a man is convicted of having sex with an animal, you shall put to death the animal and the man. And then it had the Bible verse next to the law as the authorization to do that. And if we were to do things like that, then you wouldn't be able to buy movies in a porn store about people having sex with animals. And all over this country, in thousands of counties, there are laws on the books that say it's legal to sell porn of people having sex with animals. It's legal. That's the standard template. They get it through the zoning codes. How's that? And how many countless thousands, millions of people have suffered, even died, because we have ignored God's criminal justice system? How many? Wow. All right, so I'd like to go through some of the things we do in our criminal justice system that are just flat out wrong and compare it to what the Bible tells us to do. For example, you go to court and you swear in witnesses. You get sworn in. Now, the Bible tells us don't swear. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you swear in, you know what that does? That promotes perjury. Did you know that? You get more perjury when you swear people in. Because the implication is, well, normally we know you'll lie, but now you're under oath, so you have to tell the truth. And therefore, you have people who say, well, I wasn't under oath. I wasn't under oath. And that's their defense for lying. And that happens in our government, at the level of the federal government, in Congress. High-profile cases. I wasn't under oath. And so you end up where lying and deceitfulness is the norm. And they think, well, that becomes the norm, and then we'll swear them in. They're going to tell the truth. That's ludicrous. So in Jesus said in Matthew, James said, Paul said to the Corinthians, don't take an oath, don't swear, just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Conservative Christians, when we stop swearing people in on the Bible, conservative Christians start to protest. Could you believe that? They protest. And they say, this is a shame. We need to swear people in on the Bible. We used to swear people in on the Bible. It's like Christians are just, they're just lost. And then conservative Christians, you know what else they fight for? The activist types? They fight for the right of a jury trial. Well, does God in the Bible say you need to have juries? Is that how it works? No, you need a judge who's responsible, who could be held accountable. Justice by committee is a huge liberal idea and a huge mistake. Justice by committee, the committee has no accountability. It's virtually anonymous. You pull together a committee of 12 virtually anonymous people. The community doesn't remember who they are. They decide on a rape case, a kidnapping, a murder case, and they let an obviously guilty person go free, which should be negligence. And that guy goes out and he murders his next girlfriend, and you think the committee is responsible? Nobody even remembers who they were. There's no accountability in criminal justice. And that's where the accountability should be. Oh, boy. Hey, this is Bob and Yart. We're in a live commercial break. Just for those who are listening on the web. Now, they said it might be from a cat, but actually what they did was researchers went to an animal. Now, this is a commercial break, but I'm throwing a little show content here. Researchers went to a live animal market in southern China, and they examined 25 animals representing 8 species. And the cats, they found the SARS virus, as well as in a badger and a raccoon dog. What's a raccoon dog? I know what a raccoon is, and I know what a dog is, but I don't know what a raccoon dog is. Anybody out there know? If so, I'm in need of knowing. Okay, so anyway, let's see. What if I search for raccoon? Raccoon. Let me see here. Raccoon dog. I search for that. Hey, am I searching on the web or in this web page? Does that ever become a mystery to you? You say find and it goes out on the web? Here we go. BBC Nature Wild Facts. Raccoon dog. A raccoon dog, despite being hunted in their thousands, a small island in Japan has been designated a protected area for raccoon dogs. What is a raccoon dog? Raccoon dogs can live for about 10 years in captivity. What is a raccoon dog? They're fox-like in build, but with shorter legs and their tail and tail. They have a dark patch on the side of their face, similar to a raccoon's facial markings. This is so funny. There's this big web page about raccoon dogs, and they don't tell you what they are. What is a raccoon dog? Welcome back, Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART, 1-800-836-9278. See, yeah, researchers in China, southern China, went to an animal market, and they examined eight species. They found the SARS virus in cats and in the raccoon dog. Now, a raccoon dog, that's a member of the dog family. And it looks awfully like a raccoon, especially the facial markings. And what a mess. And so could it be that, could it be that the SARS virus, and it's killed the, a couple hundred people now, could it be because of people violating the law that God laid out in the Bible? And they also found it in a badger. So just, God had really good reasons for laying out the criminal justice law that he did in the Bible. And he didn't say, have a jury trial. God gave the responsibility for determining guilt or innocence and for issuing a sentence. He gave that responsibility to judges, so that there would be responsibility and accountability, and you could even charge people with negligence. And it's their professional responsibility to come to a correct verdict. So you have a jury system, justice by committee, where people come together, and if they're, like in the O.J. Simpson case, where the so obvious that he's guilty. On Judgment Day, all the fools will find out what fools they were. If O.J. Simpson, anybody who could maintain that O.J. Simpson might not be guilty, will find out on Judgment Day that they have innocent blood on their hands because their ignorance and their immorality promotes the shedding of innocent blood, because it encourages murderers when the criminal justice system breaks. And ours is broken. And so if O.J. goes out and if he murders another girlfriend before he's done, then the jury is partly responsible because of their gross negligence. And so is the judge, and so are the defense attorneys, and so are the legislators who passed the laws that have corrupted and broken our criminal justice system. You know, even a bad judge is more likely to come to a correct verdict than a jury. Here in America, we thought the lie, not that it was a lie, the people who said it thought it was true, but the ignorance, the Pollyanna thinking of conservative Christians is that if you have a jury of your peers, of course they would find you not guilty if you were doing the right thing. And of course they would convict you if you were doing the wrong thing. That's ridiculous. Jesus said that the majority are evil. The majority are going to hell. We have thousands of Christians who've tried to save unborn children from being slaughtered by abortionists, and the juries will send us to jail, send us to prison, find us guilty time and time again if we go and block the doors of an abortion mill. They find us guilty. And we say, we're trying to save a baby from being killed. Well, we don't care. You're breaking the law. It's trespassing. So the jury trial system, it doesn't work. And those who have been deceived by the fully informed jury concept and jury nullification, that's all ignorance. That's all ignorance. Because the majority are evil. And no one should have the authority to judge the law. The judges don't get to judge or alter the law, and neither should juries. And, you know, when Jesus Christ was charged, he went to an evil judge, Pontius Pilate. In fact, the worst judge in human history. The most wicked judge in the history of the human race, Pontius Pilate. And he found Jesus Christ not guilty. He said, I find no guilt in this man worthy of death. And he went out to the jury of his peers, of Christ's peers, his fellow Jews. And that jury shouted, crucify him, crucify him. And Jesus Christ was put to death. Where the evil judge, you know, an evil judge, at least he has a reputation. A jury doesn't have a reputation. They come together, they conduct a miscarriage of justice, and they disband, and nobody even remembers who they were. The Bible talks about the appeal process, and guess what? The appeal is for the judges. The judges are the one who should appeal, not the convicted criminal. Our criminal justice system, it uses complex legal jargon. God doesn't in the Bible. Somebody steals and they get caught, they got to pay back. You know, twofold, threefold, depending on the circumstances. It's all really simple. Our system tries to intimidate innocent people. And say, you're going to represent yourself? Do you know? One judge said to me, do you know you'll have to voir dire the jury? So I said to him, does that mean I'll have to ask them questions? And he said, well, yes. Well, why don't you speak English? Did God in the Bible, when he laid out a criminal justice system, did he forget to mention the attorneys? Did he forget that part? Because in a godly criminal justice system, you don't need lawyers. What do you need a lawyer for? In our case with my nephew, Sean, we should be able to go to the judge and say, you know, the police, and thank God for the police arrested this guy. They charged him with drunken driving, vehicular assault. Here's what he did. Sean is losing these wages. He lost his motorcycle. And what is reasonable that this guy should have to pay? And the judge says, well, he's lost 2 months worth of work. And the medical bills are $15,000, and the motorcycle was $8,000, $3,000, whatever it was. And so he's got to pay $30,000. Most of it goes to the hospital and doctors, and the rest goes to the rent for a month and a new, you know, a used car. And that's it. Why do we need lawyers to get involved with that? What is the value of that? The only time you need lawyers, let me tell you when you need lawyers. Because if you don't know the Bible, you might think, well, lawyers are an essential part of a criminal justice system. The Bible is a criminal justice textbook. God laid out a complete criminal justice system, and he never said, oh, yeah, and by the way, you need lawyers. He didn't say that. So why do you need lawyers? Let me tell you why. There's only one reason. When the law has been formed into a weapon against the innocent, then you need lawyers. When the law is a weapon against the innocent, then you need lawyers. When the law is a just law, and when children can understand the law, then you don't need lawyers. You don't need lawyers. You might want to have a business specialist when corporations are entering into complex agreements. And so the people we call business lawyers could be just business consultants. Yeah, because there are some incredibly complex agreements, contractual agreements, where you need people who are experts in agreements. Sure. But lawyers, experts in the law, what does that mean? The law should be so simple that a child is an expert in it. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't kidnap, don't steal. If you murder and you're convicted, you'll be put to death. If you get drunk and you assault someone, you're going to be flogged. What's so complicated about that? So when the law is perverted, when the law is corrupted, when the law is formed into a weapon against the innocent, only then do you need lawyers. And can you have a Christian lawyer? Well, it's just like a Christian public school teacher. If a Christian public school teacher says that the system is a godless system, it's an atheist system, but I'm here to try to help some people, okay, that's fine. And the same thing with the Christian lawyer. If a Christian lawyer says our legal system is godless, it's atheistic, it's evil, but I'm here to help some to the best I can, okay, fine. But if the Christian lawyer says the lie that we have the best system in the world, that we have a great system, our system is based on the Bible and all that trash, well, then he is a way bigger part of the problem than he is a part of the solution. Because when lawyers say in America we have the best system in the world, you know what they mean? They mean we have the highest paid lawyers in the world, because we do. We have the most lawyers per capita and the most highly paid lawyers in the world. But we have one of the highest murder rates, violent crime rates, sexual assault rates in the world. 2 million people in jail. We've got the worst system in the world. Live commercial break right here. This is Bob Inyer. Hey, if you're interested in this topic, we have two resources for you. God and the Death Penalty, the video, two-hour video on the New Testament support for the death penalty, which is the foundation of criminal justice. And then we have the God's Criminal Justice Syllabus. God's Criminal Justice Syllabus. And it's just, what is it, 15 pages long or so? No, it's more than that, 20-some pages long. And it's, we sell it for $14.95. And it lays out the defense for the death penalty and then all these topics I'm covering, only in outline form and verses that are relevant to a lot of these topics. That's what you get with the criminal justice syllabus. Of course, you could get a copy of this show and make an audio tape of it and share it with your friends. This is sort of a mini criminal justice seminar, which one of these days, Lord willing, we'll redo and make a good recording of it. Right? Wouldn't that be good? That'd be good. But, or one of these days, we may remaster the old criminal justice audio tapes we have and create a new album out of it. But time and money, time and money, time and money. That's what that takes. So give us a call or go on the web at kgov.com to the online store or call us at 800-8-NYART and order God and the Death Penalty. If you have it, why don't you consider lending it to a friend to help us get the word out? And then if you've read the God's Criminal Justice Syllabus, I hope you've enjoyed it. If not, you might want to check that out. Now, absolutely, the plot, my unpublished 320-page manuscript, it's my life's work, the overview of the whole Bible. The Bible overview is the key to the details. That is the foundation upon which you can understand what God says about criminal justice. If you don't have a solid overview of the whole Bible, and then you come to this topic and you read some verses in the Bible about what God said about judges or the admissibility of evidence or the standard for convicting, and you think, huh, I wonder if that applies today. How do I know? Well, you have to understand the overview of the whole Bible, and then you could know. So if you haven't read the plot, call and order it or get it on audio tape, the plot. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-8-ENYART. There are so many Christians who might, you know, crack the Bible open and see what God says about, say, perjury. What should the punishment be for perjury? Ask Sunday school teachers or pastors or Christian leaders, even Christian legislators or judges or Christian lawyers. Say, what should the penalty for perjury be? And if you ask five of them, you'll probably get five different answers, none of which will be anything like what God says in the Bible. Typically, they don't know what God said in the Bible. They don't know? How could you not know? The law is your profession, and you're a Christian by your faith, and you believe in the Bible, and you don't even know what God said about perjury, and you deal with that in your career? Why don't they know? You know, it's one thing to see what God says about perjury and then say, but you know what, God, I disagree. That's one thing. But imagine not even giving God the courtesy to know what he said, not even to read the words, to just dismiss God, his opinion out of hand without even finding out. God, what did you say about kidnapping? And what did you say about restitution? And what did you say about incarceration? You know, God says you put somebody in jail during the trial in a serious charge. You're afraid he might flee. You put him in jail during the trial. You don't put him in jail as the punishment, because then you just put all the worst people together and they all get worse. Jail is crime school. Jail is where bad people go to find out how to be worse criminals. And so, you know, jail is a huge mistake. We put people in jail and we educate them, medicate them, entertain them, keep them warm in winter, cool in summer, get to watch cable TV, movies, buy pornography at the commissary, gamble, play volleyball, basketball, foosball, hike mountains with llamas. I've done that while in jail. I've been about 6 months in jail. I have some idea what I'm talking about. Jail is a joke. God only said you put somebody in jail, you hold them, incarcerate them while the trial's going on. Then if they're guilty, you punish them swiftly. You can't swiftly execute a 20-year jail sentence. You can't swiftly do it. You can't speed up time. So why don't Christian lawyers know what God says in the Bible about perjury, for example? That's just one topic of many. Why don't they know? Well, we Christians, we don't read the Bible all that much, because when we open it and we look at it and we read one verse, one story, so often it doesn't make sense with what we've been taught. It's just contradictory. It doesn't make sense. We've been taught that God doesn't change, and here God is answering someone's prayers. And here's God grieving at the sin of a human being. We've been taught God doesn't change. Here God is humbling himself. And so that's just another, just one little example of we have so many cliches we believe that are pagan in origin. And so when we open the Bible and we look at it, it doesn't make any sense. So we get into this mode as Christians where anything the Bible says, it doesn't really matter. We don't take it seriously. We just blow it off. We follow the cliches, the things we hear on Christian radio or TV or what we hear in church or in Sunday school. And if we read 30 Bible verses that flatly contradict it, we just blow it off. So a Christian opens up the Bible and reads something about how to commit someone who's committed, how to punish somebody who's committed perjury. A Christian lawyer. And they think, wow, look at that. That's what God says about perjury. Now, is that relevant for today? He asks himself. And he doesn't know because he doesn't have an overview of the whole Bible. He doesn't know what is relevant today and what is not relevant today. When I read a verse out of Deuteronomy, how does it apply to me today? How does it not apply? What are the principles? They don't know. And so you end up just ignoring it and believing lies. Like God said, if two teenagers fornicate, put them to death. No, he didn't. But you believe that because you've been, that's been implied to you so that you're, so that the Old Testament seems unreasonable, so that you don't have any obligation to read it. You don't feel bad about not reading it or studying it. That's why for all these years, we have told people about the plot, the overview of the whole Bible. That is, that's my life's work. The manuscript, 330-page manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible. Now, you could go to a bookstore and buy, you know, go to any bookstore, pick from 30,000 books. But the unpublished, this unpublished manuscript, you get it comes with a nice cover, the plot. In fact, the whole story of the book is on the front cover. But at any rate, you order the plot, the overview of the whole Bible. And the overview is the key to the details. And then when you have a solid overview of the whole Bible that you feel good about understanding what is the whole story of the Bible, when you open up to whatever book and you read a chapter, you understand the context. You get it. And you know the principles as to whether or not that's applicable to your life or not, whether it's applicable to your church or not, your family or your government or not. And so that's why we, for all these years, have urged people to purchase the plot. Of course, it helps support Bob and Yurt Live. It's $49.95 plus shipping and handling, but a 30-day money-back guarantee, which does mean you'd have to read it quickly. 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you're not into reading, you could get it on audio tape. I recommend starting with the Plot album and the Tree album. Most of our audio tape albums have six tapes. Bible studies, seminars, money-back guarantee on all this. And so if Christians knew what God said in the Bible about criminal justice, then we would have at least a chance of correctly influencing our government toward that end. But we don't even know. We don't even know. You know, new research that's out, this is an ABC report that the baby in the womb can hear, not only hear voices, like if somebody slams a door, an older baby in the womb will jump at the sound, but the baby knows the mother's voice. This is an ABC report this week, May 22nd, yesterday, that the fetus in the womb recognizes his mother's voice. And when they have the mother record some, reading a passage or whatever, a poem or whatever, and then another woman reads the same passage and they play it back to the baby from outside the womb? The baby's heartbeat speeds up when the mother is reading because the baby is excited because he recognizes his mom. But when the other woman is reading, the baby's heartbeat slows down. And this research has been repeated in China and Canada, and it's consistent. Why does the baby's heartbeat slow down when the other woman reads it, not his mom? Because he's concentrating. He's trying to figure out who's talking, who's speaking. Now, in America, we kill babies in the womb. We just flat out kill them. You know, we reported earlier this year in March that in England, researchers have figured out that babies are conscious long before the legal age limit for abortion. In Britain, it's 24 weeks unless the mother's life is in danger. And so there are researchers in Britain who are saying, no, you guys are wrong. The baby's consciousness doesn't get switched on late in the pregnancy. The baby's consciousness develops gradually as the neurons in the brain cells make more and more connections with each other. And they're saying that babies feel pain early, much earlier than they thought. And so some are saying in Britain that unborn children, a fetus, should be given an anesthetic during an abortion. First kill the pain and then kill the baby. Those evil fools. So in this country, our government goes after terrorists, while even our own president, George W. Bush, will appoint judge after judge that are radically pro-abortion. Oh, yeah, he appoints some that are somewhat pro-life and maybe has nominated one or two that are strongly pro-life. But most seem to be, when I look at his record, most are pro-abortion. Kill babies. No problem. This is America. And why would George W. Bush appoint judges and nominate judges who support the killing of innocent children? If he's pro-life, why would he do that? That's more evil than Bill Clinton, who thinks abortion is okay, appointing pro-abortion judges. Because Bill Clinton is not a Christian, and he thinks abortion is fine. George W. Bush says he is a Christian and abortion is murder, and he appoints some pro-abortion judges because it's good for his career. Now, that's really evil. And if Christians understood the Bible, if we understood God's principles of criminal justice, we could have a more clear and consistent voice, a clarion call out there to tell people what is right, what is wrong, and how to fix it. But almost no Christian ministries, almost none, tragically, talk about criminal justice. Even though the Bible is a criminal justice textbook and the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel. Because Jesus Christ was executed to meet the demands of justice. And millions of Christians are wishy-washy on the death penalty, and they're unwittingly undermining the gospel and evangelism. God said in the Bible, will you profane me, keeping people alive who should not live? You know, Scott Peterson, he should be dead by now. He should have been executed. But hopefully, eventually, we'll get him convicted. What a tragedy. OJ, pick your favorite murderer who's still living. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.